welcome to issue 27 of Behind the Panels, the only comic book podcast that had a groovy animated series in the 1970s. I'm one of your co-hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other co-host, David McVeigh. And as you may have guessed, we're getting a little bit punchy.
Now, those of you who may be tuning in for the first time, this is not a regular show. We're actually recording a series of holiday specials. As this goes...
Not your holiday, mind you.
No, it'd be my holiday special. I'm currently in London, not while recording this, but as this goes out onto the interwebs, I'll be finishing up a trip to London next week.
By the way, have I said it this episode yet? I hate you.
Yeah. Next week, I'll be back in studio for our regular programming.
Fantastic.
So this week, we're doing a series of specials based on books that we've either read already or just stood out and we haven't had a chance to cover yet. And this first one is, we're doing this week, Green Arrow Year One, because...
This is the fifth of the holiday specials.
This is the fifth of the holiday specials.
So the fifth one, I think, is what you mean.
Green Arrow Year One by Andy Diggle and Jock. Is the artist on this one.
And for those who remember back, Andy Diggle was the man who wrote Ratcatcher, who we gave a glowing review to, which was a fantastic
book. And he was
book.
Very pleased with on Twitter.
He was. He actually retweeted and everything.
Yeah. So, Andy, let's see if we can get another retweet off you on this special. Now, of course, we won't be doing news. We won't be doing our picks of the week. We won't be doing our...
You mean none of this?
None of that. And we won't even be doing this.
Aww. What a scoop.
But we will be doing a bit of this.
Well, see how you like this. What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
But first, as always, we couldn't let a week go by without a vintage clip. We're revisiting something we visited a little while ago.
Oh, yes!
Where some of my favorite quotes, including this one...
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
One of my favorites.
came from, but this is from a little later in that episode. Let's see if you can pick it.
Superman, Gulliver's coming back!
I have just had a brilliant idea.
Not another one. I'm not sure I can stand it.
If shrinking everyone down to 2 inches is a good idea, then shrinking them to half that size or even smaller must be a better idea.
But people don't want to be 2 inches tall, or 1 inch, or whatever you've decided to make them.
Well, there's nothing they can do about it.
But there is one person who might disagree with Dr. Gulliver. Green Arrow, the great archer, after quickly fashioning a miniature bow and set of arrows, has arrived at the edge of the moat surrounding Dr. Gulliver's castle. But... he finds that the moat, as compared to his size now, has assumed the dimensions of a small ocean.
Looks like this is going to take a little brain power. I've got it.
Folding the discarded newspaper into a paper boat, Green Arrow makes his way across the water to Dr. Gulliver's castle. With a special grapple arrow from his miniature quiver, he takes careful aim...
Holy Tom Thumb! I had enough trouble adjusting to 2 inches. I don't want to be 1 inch tall or less.
No one does, Robin. That's why.
Look!
What is it, Wonder Woman?
There! It's Green Arrow!
Finally! Some help!
But can he get up here without Dr. Gulliver or that cat seeing him? Now I'm ready, Igor. Let's close the windows and turn out the lights. And see how this special light ray works.
We've got to do something quick before he shuts that window.
Everyone, now, yell for Gulliver. Dr. Gulliver!
Hey, Gulliver! Come on, Dr. Gulliver! Dr.
Gulliver!
Dr. Gulliver!
Dr. Gulliver!
Hurry, hurry!
Dr. Gulliver!
What is it? What is it?
Come here, quick!
What do you want? I've got some work to do.
Your shoelace is untied.
My shoes don't have shoelaces.
Well, then your watch is stopped.
Are you trying to be funny? What's going on here?
That's what I want to know.
I like the fact that not only did he quickly fashion a bow and some arrows, he also fashioned a grappling hook.
Yes. I like how they took the time to explain that as well. They realized there was a plot hole there. I would like to just tip my hat, because he's given his countless joy, to Norman Alden, who was the voice of Green Arrow.
What kind of scene am I getting into here?
I mean, he provided us with wonderful little quotes like
"Great flaming arrows,"
and
"What in the name of Robin Hood is going on anyway?"
And perhaps one of my favorites,
"By Robin Hood's bow."
By Robin Hood's bow.
He was a he received Oscar buzz. For his role in "I Never Promised You a Rose Garden."
Oh, I didn't even know that.
He's now retired. He's still he's still alive. He's 87 now, and he also provided the voice of Kay in Sword in the Stone.
Well, there you go.
He appeared as Lou Carruthers, the owner of the coffee shop in Back to the Future.
I did not know that. So that's, there you go.
And he's also the colorblind cameraman in Ed Wood.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
So, Norman Alden, we salute you.
We salute you by Robin Hood's bow.
That is, of course, from the 1973, I believe, Super Friends episode, Gulliver's Gigantic Goof, which we featured last time we did a Green Arrow
and it's
story.
Magnificent. Can I just say I really like the part where he goes, let's turn out the light. and
let's turn out the lights and close the windows. Actually, that was more Mexican. But I just love the fact that Superman decided to distract the villain as well by telling him his shoelaces are untied.
And when he says, "I don't have shoelaces," he goes, "Well, you're around. Well, your watch is stopped."
I was like, "I don't want to be 2 inches or even 1 inch, whatever size you've decided on." Nobody does, Robin.
Casey Kasem.
This is terrific stuff. I just wish there was more 1970s cartoons released on DVD. But
I agree. We're gonna have to look. I'm petition running. Warner Brothers, I think, and say you need to release this stuff.
We're 27 issues in, and you know, I'm nowhere near running out of gold material to go through. But if we cover any more Green Arrow stuff, I might run out.
Well, yeah, Green Arrow is a little bit under coverage.
Well, see, he did that cartoon in 1973, and that was pretty much it. Until
that special that came out recently, yeah.
Well, no, they did. He was in the Justice League Unlimited.
Oh, that's right, Justice League Unlimited
thing. And then he appeared in episodes of the Batman. He was in a special of Justice League: The New Frontier, and he was in a bunch of cartoons there. And now he appears regularly in Young Justice, and of course, he was in the Smallville TV series as well.
And now he's got his own series
coming out. Well, at least he's got a pilot being commissioned. So hopefully that'll get picked up into a series. Hasn't had enough coverage, but certainly there's this big gap between the 70s and the 90s. Ooh. Oh, sorry, the early 2000s. Well, he just didn't appear at all.
I know, that's kind of sad.
And now he's like this linchpin character in the DCU.
So we better just go ahead and give him more coverage.
Absolutely. So this week we're doing his origin story, which is he's refashioned an origin story in Green Arrow Year One. Now, of course, we should say up front, with DC's New 52, all previous origin stories have been thrown out the window unless Earth 1 proves otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Earth 2, you mean?
So was it?
Earth 2?
Earth 2, sorry. Earth 2, yeah. Proves otherwise. And, you never know, this origin story might still exist on a multi-Earth somewhere, but...
Well, I think that's always DC's excuse, isn't it?
Yeah.
Somewhere out there.
That's also... It's kind of like the Abrams Star Trek.
Yeah.
All your stuff happened just over there.
Yeah.
So this is, as we said at the top of the show, written by our favourite man, Andy Diggle, with beautiful art by Jock. Mm. And I believe
he couldn't afford a last name.
He couldn't afford a last name. He's so good, he doesn't need a last name.
Is that what it is?
I believe they worked together previously. And I'm just looking this up quickly. Jock, the artist, he's a British comic book artist, Jock. And I think they worked together on The Losers prior to this. Yeah. So that's kind of where I first became familiar with both of them. And when I heard that team was doing a Green Arrow, I was quite excited. Even though this isn't the first time the Green Arrow origin story had been told. It was told back in the 40s in the original More Fun Comics. I think it was issue 101, so 30 issues into his run. They told the origin story, and the basics haven't changed. This is about him being marooned on an island. It was told in another book called The Wonder Year, which was a 4-issue miniseries done back in the 90s. And there was also in The Longbow Hunters, which is the classic miniseries by Mike Grell. There's also a bit of an origin story recap in that as well. So we're yet to see what the origin story is in the New 52 in a complex way. They haven't really covered that the same way. Because around the issue 7s and 8s, they started going back and haven't really
covered his origin at all.
Though. No, and I think they're kind of... Now that they've got a new writer on it, maybe she'll go back and cover that. But at the moment, it's got a lot of forward momentum. So we can assume he was marooned on an island at some stage.
I have a funny feeling that it's not going to be too far
off. He'll be an alien. Michael Bay has said
mutant
that he's an
ooze.
And that's why he's green. That's where he gets all those wonderful toys from.
I see.
So in Green Arrow Year One.
But prior to all of that.
Yes. And prior to all that, we have Green Arrow Year One, which came out in 2007. This was originally published as a four-issue miniseries, but has been collected together as a trade paperback in a beautiful hardcover that I have. This is basically, it starts off with Oliver Queen as a bit of a thrill-seeking playboy.
A drunken lout, really.
He's a drunken lout.
he's a drunken lout.
He's not a nice character at the start of
this. He's a long-haired drunken lout.
He is.
He really is.
Has no responsibility. He decides to go off on a boat trip.
He's a trust fund baby.
He is. That's exactly what it is. So he goes off on this boat trip. But he's on this trip, he's actually betrayed by his trusted bodyguard, Hackett.
Hmm.
And as a result, he finds himself on a deserted island, which leads us into what's typically your Green Arrow origin story. But that's usually as far as the origin story goes. We just find out that he
had to learn the bow and everything to provide for himself.
And just to survive. And when he came back, he was a changed man and he decided to fight crime and justice and all that kind of stuff.
However, Andy Diggle took it a little bit further.
He wanted to know what happened on the island, what he had to do to survive, and what else may have caused his thirst to see justice.
Mm.
So he, typically it starts off, he makes himself a makeshift bow, an arrow, and begins training on the island for months and starts to realize that maybe he has kind of been squandering his life a little bit. And so he starts to come to this realization, but it turns out that the island's not deserted.
No, at first he thinks it is, but there is stuff happening on the other side of the island.
That's right. There's a little bit of a woman who's calling herself China White has actually enslaved the natives of the island and using them in her drug trade.
Hmm.
And they're basically forcing them to grow opium and export it to places like Star City and other places that Oliver normally hangs out in. Now he has. It turns out that his trusted bodyguard Hackett is actually a business associate of China White.
Yeah.
And he has a bit of a tussle with him, and he's wounded in this. And this one of the natives, and her name is Tiana, I think. Yeah, has saved him from death. And through this process, I think she first administers him with a bit of opiates.
Well, is it because she's got it? Because, of course, that's the national product of this island. And she basically nurses him back.
But he has a bit of a fever dream as well and a bit of a drug-induced dream and comes, slightly addicted to the opium, which is interesting because one of the major stories in Green Arrow's history is, of course, the drug addiction of his ward, Speedy. Now, when this was originally being solicited, I think I remember Andy Diggle, and it could have been Andy Diggle or it could have been a bit of studio press, actually saying, we actually find out why Oliver reacted so harshly to finding out his ward was a junkie in that famous cover from the 70s because he'd been there himself and he knew the effects that drugs could have on people.
And not only on himself, but also on the entire society of
exactly
this island.
Right.
Yeah.
Eventually, to cut a long story short, he fights the crew, he defeats them, and when the authorities turn up, he kind of downplays it a bit and says, he doesn't take the credit for busting the crime ring, but then he decides to shun the limelight so he can go back and what leads to him leading a double life back in Star City as the costume superhero Green Arrow, but we never actually really fully see him go into Green Arrow. This is the story.
This is a story on the
leading
island.
Up to it, and then you can kind of tell whatever Green Arrow story you want after that.
Mm.
And the thing I think about this story is that it does fit nicely into other versions of Green Arrow. This could have stuff other origin stories like Wonder Year or the other origin stories because it's just fleshing out details and it doesn't actually really contradict too much of what we know about.
Well, exactly. And that's what I liked about it. It's kind of like Batman Year One as well. I feel the same way, which is it's an origin story, which is a classic origin story that can basically be used before any incarnation.
Mm.
You don't need to know what happens after this. All you need to know is that he becomes a costume crime fighter. And being a costume crime fighter, you can backtrack it to this story or any variation of this story and say, yeah, that works.
Yeah, and look, Green Arrow always had a very simple origin story, because when he was created in the 1940s, he was a Batman clone.
Hmm.
And we'd never really gone much deeper than that in his origin story. The character had actually become very complex over the years. As we covered in way back, I believe if you're looking for it on iTunes or looking for it on our sites, we're talking about issue 12 of Behind the Panels, where we covered the classic Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Hard Traveling Heroes arc, which is where he actually really became fully fleshed out as a flag-waving liberal.
Hippie.
He basically became a small L liberal.
And he's fantastic for him. I mean, that's what we know Green Arrow as now.
Exactly. And
that's what's missing from the New 52.
Absolutely. And these are the earlier incarnations of the characters. Mm. He might become that yet, which again is where all these things still kind of fit to each other. And I think if you keep an origin story simple enough, you can flesh out an
And that's why I'm at this point, until told otherwise, I am assuming that year one is the origin story for the New 52 as well. I mean, because it still fits. There's nothing in the New 52 that would say, no, that couldn't be his origin story.
No, and look, I mean, I'm sure they'll tweak it. I think there'd be an uproar if they changed it from the island origin, in the way that Wonder Woman's origin has now been retconned a bit.
Yeah.
And they've changed her divine clay origins. It's still a divine origin. But
it would be changing his being stuck on the island and having to learn how to shoot a bow and blah, blah, would be like saying Bruce Wayne's parents didn't get killed.
Yeah, and I think this is where the characters diverge, because he was a millionaire who became a costume crime fighter. In the 40s, he had a sidekick named Speedy. He had an arrow car, an aeroplane, an arrow cave. You know, he had all these things. These days, not so much.
No.
Although he has now got
like an X-Files type team behind him.
Yeah, exactly. But he at one point in the original DC universe, he lost all of his money at one point, which is around the time that Hard Traveling Heroes arc kicks in. And he went on like that for some time. He ran for mayor at one point. In the later issues, he actually became mayor in two completely separate storylines that didn't seem to reference each other. You know, he had, you know, various fighting for the little guy adventures.
Yeah.
And I think this is why this story is so good, because it sets up a character who would do that.
Yeah.
Who would go from
He was
being...
also the voice of the little guy in Justice League. I mean, that was very important in Justice League, was the fact that when they would become the higher than thou, mightier than thou power up in their satellite, there was always Green Lantern to say, but what about...
Green Arrow.
Green Arrow, sorry. Green Lantern was one of the high and mighties. Green Arrow, who would say, but what about?
Yeah.
You know, and I really love that about the character. I really love the fact that he is there for the... Because he is just a human.
Yeah.
You know, and he is just... And even Batman, we seem to forget, is human because of the way he is portrayed. He is a superhero.
As we spoke about in one of the earlier issues, he's part of the Trinity.
That's right. He's part of the Trinity, even though he is without superpowers. Green Arrow is without superpowers, but he doesn't feel mighty. He doesn't feel like he's a part of the Trinity. He always felt like the outsider.
Mm.
And I like that about his character.
Mm. And there's actually issues where he's offered, he's left the Justice League and he's offered a role back in the Justice League. He says, no, thank you. That's not what I'm about anymore. Mm. You know, and I think that's the difference between him and other characters. He will turn that down. One of the most beautiful arcs was the very end of DC's old universe. Mm. And we've spoken about this a few times.
Actually, a brilliant series. For those who haven't read it, that's, what is it, 13 issues, 14
about
issues?
About that, yeah. And this was J.T. Kroll's last run on the original thing. He did start the new run, which wasn't as good.
Yeah, this is all the Brightest Day and
yeah, it came
Night.
Straight out of Brightest Day. And this is a point where Green Arrow had been outed. Oliver Queen had been outed as Green Arrow. He'd murdered somebody in cold blood, someone who had murdered... Speedy's son, basically, daughter, rather, and cut off one of his arms. So he was in a very emotionally fragile state. His family had been hurt, and his city had been blown up.
Yeah.
And so he found him and killed him in cold blood. He turned himself in, and he was tried for this, and he was exonerated. Oh, no, he wasn't exonerated. He wasn't. He was found guilty, but he wasn't sent to jail. He was exiled. So what he did was he found himself in this forest that had been created in the middle of the city. And what came out of that was this beautiful story of someone kind of reflecting on who they were as a person.
Yeah, rediscovering themselves.
And I think this really traces it back to this idea of where he came from, that he was this trust fund baby.
Mm.
And what's beautiful about that ending to the DCU was that it kind of felt full circle for the character.
Yeah.
You know, he'd, or a 180, if you prefer. You know, he'd gone from a point where he was the antithesis of enlightened to achieving enlightenment in this mystical forest, which is, you never would have seen that character doing that, you know, even in the 70s or 80s when they were writing him as...
And I love the fact that by the end of that series, he has become a hero again.
Absolutely.
People have come to him and said, can you come and help? And he's come back into the city and he's become Green Arrow again.
Yeah.
And he's actually gone back to doing what he does. But he needed that time.
Mm.
You know, he needed that time, just like he needs the time on the island in this.
Mm.
He needs that time to rediscover or to discover who he is.
Mm.
And we've gone... the thing is, it never sits well, him being the trust fund baby.
No,
and when you actually read this book, the first, I guess it's the first issue in the original four issues where he is just the drunken, long-haired trust fund baby, you know that's not him. And the fact that he is the drunk and everything else says he's not happy.
No.
And when he finds himself on that island and he's rediscovering himself and he gets purpose by saving the tribespeople on the island, he finds himself.
Yeah.
And he finds the purpose in his entire existence.
Mm. And look, you know, it's not just a beautifully told story and a well-paced story. I mean, this is a mini-series that goes to four issues, and it's a story that needed four issues to be told. It's a perfectly executed story. It's the perfect length. And as we've said, the art is stunning. There are some very simple pages. Like, there's some fight scenes that I'm looking at now that are just very, very simple, classic artwork. And there's other pages that are just stunning.
Mm.
Well,
we were commenting before, the opening page is this splash page of him standing in the water.
Well, Brian K. Vaughan says in his introduction to the collected edition that you get one page, is what he says, that you modern-day audiences have so many competing things for their attention that you have to grab the casual reader on that first flip-through.
Hmm.
Otherwise, it's going to go back on the shelf with all other, you know, lost hopes and forgotten dreams. In this is the opening page. He's got this close-up of a ticking clock, what you think is an arrowhead, but it's actually the hands of a stopwatch. As he's standing on the precipice of something, and it pans out, and he's in this frozen tundra, saying...
compass needle.
That's compass. Right. And he, when it pans out into the frozen tundra, he's got a single line there, which is he sees things as a challenge. Mm. This is someone who's basically living life as an adventure. He's almost like a Richard Branson sort of character here. Like, everything is another
mountain. He has more money than sense at this point.
Absolutely, yeah. And he, it's just such a stunning start to the book because, as you said, it's such a disparity with the Green Arrow that we know.
Yeah.
So for that to be a start of a Green Arrow book, you go, okay, I'm interested in seeing where they go from here.
Hmm.
And where they go is a very traditional story, but via a very non-traditional route.
I agree. No, it's actually a really good read. I remember when I read this for the first time, I sat there because I'd gotten reinterested in Green Arrow because of my association with you, actually.
Hmm.
And I started to read a lot more Green Arrow. And I used to like Green Arrow as a kid, but it wasn't one that I was always drawn to.
Hmm.
And it's really interesting going back and reading a lot of Arrow at the moment. Well, you just sit there and go, there is actually a lot of depth to this character. There's a lot going on in this character. And there is as much going on in Green Arrow as there is in Batman. Batman's got the press, but Green Arrow is quiet. Just like the character, it's the underdog.
Yeah, it's probably what appeals to me about Green Arrow. And look, you know, I like Batman too for the same reasons. Unfortunately, as you just said, Batman is a little overexposed.
Mm.
So I feel like we've seen
That's probably Batman. Actually the same reason why I really like Power Girl. She's a part of the
super... She's overexposed.
Well, no, I think she's part of the super books, but she is the dark horse of them. She's the one where we've never really... She's never been given her own place to shine because she doesn't wear an S, and she doesn't have her own origin because Supergirl's already taken that from her, you know? And so it's like you sit there and go, who are you and what are you? And even she, going back and reading various incarnations of her background, they keep changing her origin stories and so forth. But once again, just before the New 52, that run, that 14 issue, 13 issue run, whatever it was, same era as that Green Arrow run,
was sensational. And it was like this solidified Power Girl as being this great character, and then they just abolished her.
Yeah, and you know, and it's probably the reasons I like Green Arrow so much are the reasons I often have problems with Superman. And we talked about this in earlier episodes, where he's such a powerful character, you either have to make the enemies so ridiculously powerful in order for him to have a legitimate threat, or you have to keep putting poor Lois and Jimmy in danger every you know, a couple of minutes. It's harder to have personal stories with him, although they've done that a little bit better in the New 52, I think. And there have been some really good personal Superman stories, but they're few and far between because he's such a godlike character.
He is a god. I mean, it's a hard call. Superman walks a very fine line. And that's actually one of the things I really love about the old Batman-Superman comics, which, since the New 52, have they continued publishing? Have they finished those, haven't they?
No, they've stopped those.
They stopped those with the New 52. But those comics, that comic series was fantastic.
Oh, it was brilliant.
The reason why it was so fantastic was because there was an inherent distrust between Batman and Superman. And, Batman to Superman. Because all the way through it, Batman would say, and there was a great line in it I remember from an early on issue where he basically said, Clark is so naive. And he goes, he doesn't even realize that he's a god. And one day, God help us all. If he ever realizes he's a god, we're all in trouble, you know. And so it was that time in that book where we learned that Batman actually carries a kryptonite ring in his utility belt, just in case, you know. Yeah. So there is an inherent distrust with between Batman and Superman because Batman is not convinced that Clark can be as innocent.
And as we spoke about a few weeks ago, when we're looking at Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Trinity. That was a book that really started that relationship off from a point of distrust, and never really it never recovered.
No,
because Batman's inherently distrustful. Green Arrow is what Batman would be if he pursued crime fighting. And well, not if his parents had stayed alive, because I think Green Arrow's parents are dead, but if he hadn't seen his parents murdered in an alley.
Well, yeah, because there's an inherent innocence to Green Arrow that Batman doesn't share. Batman has a very dark edge to him because his entire crime fighting is built on revenge. It's built on justice.
He is an almost fascist character.
Absolutely. Whereas Green Arrow is there to do good,
yeah,
but he's not fashioned on that same dark core. Mm.
They're fighting the same war from different ends of the political spectrum.
That's right.
You know, obviously they got and I don't think
and because of the small L liberal nature of Green Arrow, he sees the world in many shades of gray. Batman sees it as black and white. Batman sees it as you are good or you are evil, and that's all there is to it. And that's what when we read Noel, Batman Noel, was all about was trying to say to Batman, it's not always black and white.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Green Arrow sees those shades of gray. This is why he fights sometimes for the little problem, guy. Though, as well. And because of that, it gets a little bit wishy-washy sometimes. Yeah.
But look, you know, this is regardless of what universe DC is pursuing at the moment, this is a magnificent book. Highly, highly, highly recommended if you hadn't checked it out.
And at this point, until they do retcon it, this is still the origin, even for the New 52. Yeah.
Look, in the next couple of months, they might retcon it. But
I'm standing by that. This is still the origin at this point.
At the moment, in the Green Arrow book, he's off having foursomes. So you know,
yeah, okay, but that's post Island.
That's post Island
or post Court. No, we won't go there.
So
tag. Got to keep telling myself there's a clean tag.
But look, you know, this is available everywhere as a trade paperback. Grab it, or you know, I think it's actually available on the DC app as well on the iPad. So download it, buy it, do what you do.
Well worth reading.
Yeah,
well worth reading. A fine pick for this week.
I thought so.
Now I gotta say, as we said at the head of the show, we are pre-recording these, but I am very, very, very proud to announce that next week you're back.
I'm back.
Next week is a real episode. News and all. So news and all. We're back and we'll be doing a little bit of this and a little bit of this and a little bit of this.
Oh, good for you.
And what's the book for next week, Richard?
The next week we're going a little bit darker.
Just a little bit
darker. Well, we've covered his work before. We're doing another Garth Ennis book. We are doing, of course, the first volume of Preacher, Gone to Texas.
Gone to Texas. Now, we will actually put up on the show notes what volumes that actually encompasses, because Gone to Texas, it's all up. Preacher is 60-something issues. But
yeah,
Gone
I think
to Texas,
it's actually 66 issues.
66 issues, there you go. The Gone to Texas, I think is like, the first seven issues or something like that.
I think that's exactly right.
We will get that exact number for the show notes. But yeah, so read Preacher, Gone to Texas, which is actually the first trade.
It is the first trade, and it covers Preacher 1 through 7.
1 through 7. There you go. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. So if you've got them as individuals, Preacher 1 through 7, or if you're buying them in trades, it's the Gone to Texas trade.
Mm-hmm.
And Richard, where can people find you on the internet?
They can find
and they'll be able to find you soon back here. But
yeah, right now I'm in London, but they can find me on the interwebs at therealbits.com. That's therelbits.com. Or you can find me on Twitter at DVDBits if you want to have a chat.
Fantastic. And you can find me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh, all one word. And that is it for this show. Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us for all of our special episodes over the last few weeks. And as I said, next week will be a full-blooded, full-featured version of the show again.
Unless you tell us that you've preferred this format.
And yeah, well, we can always do that too. We'll be heartbroken, but you know.
Because we like finding crazy news every week.
Yeah, absolutely.
The vintage clips stay.
Vintage clips will always stay. All right, Richard. See you next week, and like when you're back.
Yeah.
All right.
See you then.
Bye.